Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, May 2nd, 2022. Coming up this hour.
U.S. stocks begin the new trading month, coming off the worst April in more than 50 years.
Investors brace for this week's Fed decision.
Warren Buffett goes on a buying spree in the first quarter.
And Nancy Pelosi makes a surprise visit to Ukraine.
A new crime-fighting strategy begins today in New York City. Plus, senators are calling on President Biden to fight disruptions in the solar industry. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. Ninth straight win for the Yankees. The Mets won another series. NBA playoff road wins for Milwaukee and Golden State.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are rising this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures up 10 points, Dow futures up 93, and NASDAQ futures up 40. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 2.93%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.72%, and NYMEX crude oil is down 2.6%. Nathan.
Well, Karen, investors begin this month of May after coming off a historically bad April. The S&P 500 fell 8.8% for the worst April performance since 1970. Tech investors haven't taken a beating like this in nearly 14 years. The NASDAQ plunged more than 13% in April, its worst performance since October of 2008. Katie Nixon is Chief Investment Officer at Northern Trust.
I mean, I think valuation is very fragile in this rising rate environment here. And then at the same time, you've got some fundamentals that, you know, at best are sort of flattening out and at worst are showing some declining trends. I mean, Netflix is sort of the poster child, joined now by Amazon. That's really showing a weakening of demand.
Northern Trust Chief Investment Officer Katie Nixon notes the S&P and the NASDAQ have each fallen for four consecutive weeks.
Well, bonds have also been taking a pounding this year, Nathan, and one of the biggest investors outside America thinks there may be more pain ahead. We get the latest live with Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Typically, investors can take refuge in bonds, especially U.S. Treasuries, and for years, they've been supported by Japanese buyers. But that is no longer the case. Japanese institutional managers are now fueling a great bond sell-off. The largest overseas holder of treasuries has offloaded almost $60 billion over the past 3 months. That's according to data from BMO Capital Markets. There are several reasons: market volatility, divergent monetary policy, and a weaker yen. And Japanese investors may wait for higher and higher rates before ever jumping back in. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thanks. Of course, both bond and equity investors will be paying close attention to this week's policy decision from the Fed. It is one of the most anticipated in years. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Michael McKee.
The government reported Friday that employment costs rose the most since 1997 in the first quarter, while the Fed's favorite inflation gauge rose to the highest since 1982. Analysts say that more than seals a 50 basis point rate increase from the Fed on Wednesday. It raises the question of whether the Fed needs to keep raising by 50 or even 75 going forward. They won't say, but Chairman Jay Powell will be asked about it at his news conference. The Fed will also be detailing how and when it will start reducing the balance sheet and trying to reassure Americans inflation is their top priority. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Mike, thanks. And, well, of course, we'll have full coverage and analysis of Wednesday's Fed decision beginning at 1 p.m. Wall Street time on both Bloomberg Radio and television, Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. And it's also another busy week for earnings, with more than 160 companies in the S&P 500 reporting. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellet.
Big technology firms and banks are behind us, but we'll be hearing from a broad swath of companies as investors assess the ongoing themes of inflation, consumer demand, and geopolitics. Sarah Malik is Chief Investment Officer at Nuveen.
Earnings look strong. Three quarters of companies are beating earnings, double-digit revenue growth overall, and about 5 to 6% earnings growth.
Among some of the names reporting this week: Airbnb, AIG, AMD, ConocoPhillips, Uber, Lyft, Starbucks, Yum Brands, and and travel names Expedia, Hilton, and Marriott. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. Now, one company that already reported over the weekend was Berkshire Hathaway. The Warren Buffett conglomerate eked out a profit gain, but perhaps more importantly, the billionaire went on a buying spree in the first quarter. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Warren Buffett made $41 billion in net stock purchases during the first quarter. It was his biggest buying spree in at least a decade. And a war and a soaring U.S. inflation did not deter him from doubling down on a tried and tested strategy to navigate the fallout. Now, among the purchases, Berkshire raises its Chevron holdings, and Buffett discloses that the company now owns an expanded 9.5% stake in Activision Blizzard. And at the annual shareholder meeting, the 91-year-old Buffett and his business partner, 98-year-old Charlie Munger, gave no indication that they plan to step back from their roles anytime soon. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Now let's get to the latest on the war in Ukraine. After weeks of Russian bombardments, civilians are starting to leave a besieged steel plant in Mariupol. President Zelensky says about 100 men, women, and children will arrive in Ukrainian-controlled territory this morning. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi plans to meet with Poland's president today after a surprise visit to Kyiv. We get that story from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter.
This was a well-kept secret. Pelosi leading a congressional delegation pledging continued support.
We are visiting you to say thank you for your fight for freedom.
And says continued U.S. aid.
Our commitment is to be there for you until the fight is done.
Pelosi then traveled back to Poland. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thanks. Let's turn to the pandemic now, where our focus remains in China. Coronavirus lockdowns there are taking a significant toll on the economy. Over the weekend, data showed both manufacturing and services activity plunged last month to their worst levels in more than 2 years.
And in Australia, Nathan, Qantas has revived a plan for the world's longest nonstop flights. They would connect Australia's east coast with New York and London. The airline says it's buying 12 Airbus jets that can make the 20-hour journeys. Qantas will begin the service from Sydney in 2025. And straight ahead, we have your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's 5:07 on Wall Street, 54 degrees in Central Park. Big problems on the rails this morning. New Jersey Transit is suspended from Trenton to Penn Station. Details coming up in traffic. First, Michael Barr with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. A new crime-fighting initiative begins today in New York City. Mayor Eric Adams says in the 40 most violent precincts, authorities will move neighborhood coordinating officers into evening patrols. Other plans include sending field intelligence officers to the street. Overall crime is up 30% last month compared to April of last year. Gun violence is also on the rise. Mayor Adams also says they will fight people who cheat on paying subway fares in the city. Broadway theaters are ending the policy of requiring customers to show proof of vaccination. The Broadway League says in a statement that the owners and operators of all 41 Broadway theaters are extending the mask requirement at least through the end of May, but many will no longer check for vaccination status. President Biden spoke in Minneapolis at a memorial service for former Vice President Walter Mondale. Mondale died in April of last year at age 93. President Biden said he and Mondale, who was known as Fritz, were close friends.
I'm moved to be with you here today as an honor, one of the great giants in American history, and that's not hyperbole. Fritz was a giant in American political history.
President Biden described Mondale as a dedicated patriot and public servant. The judge joined the Country Music Hall of Fame last night, just a day after Naomi Judd died unexpectedly. Naomi's daughters, Winona and Ashley Judd, accepted the honor. Winona Judd.
This is the first time I've talked since saying goodbye to her. At 2:20, I kissed her on the forehead, and I walked away, and this is the first place I've been.
Winona and Ashley Judd said their mother died at the age of 76 due to the disease of mental illness. Nearly two dozen senators today called on President Biden to swiftly advance a trade probe that they said was already causing massive disruption in the U.S. solar industry. According to the letter from 22 senators, the investigation into whether Chinese companies are circumventing decades-old tariffs by assembling solar cells modules in Southeast Asia will severely harm American businesses and workers. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, Nathan. The Mets weekend, of course, began with the no-hitter. It ended last night with Max Scherzer giving up 3 home runs, but the Mets' bats produced 15 hits and a 10-6 win over the Phillies at Citi Field. Jeff McNeil had 4 of those hits, raising his average to 361. Dom Smith had 4 hits. He drove in 3 runs. So did Starling Marte. The Mets have now played 7 series. They have not had a sweep, but they've won all 7. The Yankees have had 3 straight series sweeps, 9 wins in a row in Kansas City. They trailed 4-1, took the lead in the 7th inning, scoring 2 runs without a hit, and they went on to win 6-4. Aaron Judge homered with 1 out in the 1st inning and hit another with 2 outs of the 9th. Judge had no homers over his first 13 games. He's hit 7 in his last 8 games. The Yanks take this 9-game win streak in tonight's game in Toronto. NBA playoffs start of round 2. Milwaukee won in Boston 101-89. Giannis Antetokounmpo had a triple-double. Golden State in Memphis lost Draymond Green in the second quarter, ejected for a flagrant foul. They held a 1-point lead at the end.
Bane will throw it in. Finding Clark. Clark bounce pass over to Morant. He'll drive in. Scoop is up. No good. Rebound. Wiggins. The Warriors win. The Warriors win. Memphis got the look they wanted, and Morant couldn't finish it. And Golden State captures game 1 with Draymond Green in the locker room.
7-5 the game at the call. 2 more series openers tonight. It's also opening night in the Stanley Cup playoffs. A quartet of games including the Bruins at Carolina. The Hurricanes won the 3 regular season meetings by a combined score of 16-1. Rangers and Penguins, game 1 at the Garden tomorrow. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thanks. S&P futures right now up 12 points. Dow futures up 120. NASDAQ futures up 45 points. The 10-year Treasury down 1/32. The yield, 2.93%. Insights on this market next with Brian Levitt of Invesco. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather turning cloudy today with a high near 60 degrees. We'll be in the mid-60s, partly to mostly cloudy tomorrow. Showers Wednesday with a high near 60. Right now, 54 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. The dollar is steady this morning. U.S. stock index futures, meanwhile, are higher. There are worries over high inflation, tightening monetary policy, and China's COVID lockdowns that are contributing to some investor caution this morning. But again, treasuries are moving higher, and this was after April's slump, which is among the worst since the pandemic roiled markets in 2020. Right now, S&P futures are up about 16 points, Dow futures up 142, and NASDAQ futures up 48. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg, and the DAX in Germany is down 1%. 10-year treasury down 1/32, yield 2.93%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.72%. NYMEX crude oil is down more than 3% on $3.25 at $101.44 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The evacuation has begun for civilians holed up at a steel plant in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol after nearly 2 months under siege by Russian forces. Local officials said people sheltering elsewhere in the city would also be allowed out today. In a surprise visit to Ukraine, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi promised continued support. Today, Pelosi met with Poland's president. In the NBA playoffs, the Celtics lost to the Bucks 101-89 in their opening game of their series. The Warriors beat the Grizzlies 117-116 in their game 1. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The Orioles beat the Red Sox 9-5. The Nationals beat the Giants 11-5. The A's lost. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. As we get ready to kick off a new trading month, we are joined by Brian Levitt, global market strategist at Invesco. Brian, it's great to speak with you this morning. And you know the old saying, sell in May, go away. But investors already took care of that in April. So where now, Brian?
Yeah, you know, and actually historically sell in May and go away hasn't been as good of a strategy as people think that it's been. Look, it's going to be challenging. We're still in an environment where the Federal Reserve needs to tighten policy pretty significantly. We know that we've got pretty strong demand, which is good for the economy, but we've also got supply challenges. And so for the Fed to bring down inflationary pressure, they're going to have to work on the demand side, which is tightening of financial conditions, which means, you know, equities and credit are still likely to be volatile. The good news is, a lot of pain has already been brought to these markets. We don't think a recession is in the offing. So, you know, we should start to see some signs of equity markets bottoming. But again, it's going to be a challenging process. Ultimately, I think we'll find our way through it. But investors should expect more volatility along the way.
So you don't think this market has found bottom yet?
Well, I think we're certainly getting closer. Typically, what you see is a larger capitulation amongst retail investors. And I think we're starting to get closer. We're starting to see some signs of pretty extreme bearishness. We've got a lot of names within the indices trading well below, 50 and 200 day moving averages. So we're starting to get there. I think the challenge is that financial conditions have tightened, but perhaps have not tightened as much as they need to in order to start bringing inflationary pressures down. So, as always, we don't want to fight the Fed. The Fed is going to have to tighten financial conditions further, which could put some pressure in markets. But ultimately, our view is that inflationary pressures will start to trend in the right direction. The Fed will front load those interest rate hikes. And then the hope is, and our belief is that as inflationary pressures moderate, the Fed will be able to back off their tightening stance and thus not causing a recession in the economy, which should provide a better backdrop for markets.
When you say front loading interest rate hikes, are you thinking multiple 50 basis point moves and how many?
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. That's what the market is already pricing in. So, the market is already expecting 50 basis point hikes at the next three meetings, which I believe is the right way to go. I mean, look, the bond market has already priced in a lot of the move. Yes, equities have sold off, as you would expect when policy starts to shift. We might as well go ahead and start to deliver on those rate hikes so we can start to tighten financial conditions further and start to bring down inflationary pressures.
So where do you advise your clients to adjust their portfolios in this kind of rate hiking cycle with a front-loading Fed over the next few months?
Yeah, you start to prepare for the slowdown in economic activity. Now, people think of a slowdown in economic activity as ominous. Usually equities perform well in a slowdown in economic activity. You want to shift towards higher quality, more defensive, cash flow generating businesses away from the speculative type names that drove a lot of the market in 2021. The other thing is government bonds tend to provide nice ballast in a slowdown. I know everybody's fleeing government bonds as interest rates move up, but an equity government bond barbell tends to do well in a slowdown. The bigger question there, Nathan, is the next move from there a contraction, or are inflationary pressures going to come down, allowing the consumer to start to feel better and we move back into a more expansionary environment? The latter would be my view, but for now, it's a slowdown. Higher quality investments tend to do well in a slowdown.
So in our last 30 seconds here, Brian, you're still expecting that the S&P is going to end this year higher than it did last year?
Well, I mean, we've certainly got a lot to dig out of, so I think that'll be a challenge. The question is whether, where we go from here. Again, I expect some near-term volatility, but ultimately I think the markets will start to grind higher from where we are now. Now, does that mean a positive year for markets? That's going to be tough, right? That would envision a pretty significant move from where we are now, given how much damage has already been done. But can we move higher from here? Yeah, again, it's going to be volatile. But typically, markets tend to perform well in a slowdown phase so long as the Fed doesn't have to tighten the screws so significantly.
Thanks for this, Brian. Great having you on with us. Brian Levitt, global market strategist at Invesco. Right now, S&P futures are moving a little bit higher. They're up 17 points. Dow futures up 163. NASDAQ futures higher by 60 points. And the 10-year Treasury is down 1/32nd. The yield, 2.93%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather turning cloudy today with a high near 60 degrees, mid-60s, partly to mostly cloudy tomorrow. Showers and a high near 60 on Wednesday. Right now, clouds and 54 degrees in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Traders entering May after historically poor April. The NASDAQ had its worst month since October of 2008, and the S&P had its worst April since 1970.
And it comes, Karen, as the Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates 50 basis points at this Wednesday's meetings. Miller Tabak, Chief Market Strategist Matt Maley, says if inflation persists, the Fed's path forward becomes murkier.
That's the fear, that the Fed is going to have no choice but to tighten further and because of this fear of stagflation, and that's going to cause the market to fall further than it has.
Matt Maley and Miller Tabak says traders should take advantage of the recent sell-off.
And it's not just stocks, Nathan. The bond market's also coming off a historically bad month, and there could be more pain ahead. Bloomberg's John Tucker tells us that's being fueled by Japanese investors. John, good morning.
Karen, Japanese institutional managers known for their legendary U.S. debt buying sprees are now fueling the great bond sell-off. The largest overseas holder of U.S. Treasuries has offloaded almost $60 billion over the past 3 months. Currency hedging costs have offset the appeal of higher U.S. yields. Japanese investors may not return until the benchmark 10-year yield trades firmly above 3%. Live in New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. Over the weekend, Warren Buffett conglomerate Berkshire Hathaway reported earnings, and it revealed the billionaire was very active in the first quarter. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us live with that story. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Warren Buffett made $41 billion in net stock purchases during the first quarter, his biggest buying spree in at least a decade. And a war and soaring U.S. inflation did not deter him from doubling down on a tried and trusted strategy to navigate the fallout. Among the purchases, Berkshire raises its Chevron holdings, and the company now owns an expanded 9.5% stake in Activision Blizzard. And at the annual shareholders meeting, the 91-year-old Buffett and his business partner, 98-year-old Charlie Munger, gave no indication that they plan to step back from their roles anytime soon. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. While overseas in Ukraine, about 100 civilians were evacuated from the besieged steel plant in the port city of Mariupol. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky met with U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi during a surprise visit this weekend in Kyiv. The House Speaker plans to meet with Poland's president today. And again, futures are higher straight ahead. Your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, 53 degrees in Central Park, New Jersey. Transit is suspended between Trenton and Penn Station. It's because of overhead wire problems. We'll tell you more in traffic shortly. First, Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. New anti-crime efforts begin today in New York City. Mayor Eric Adams says in the 40 most violent precincts, authorities will move neighborhood coordinating officers into evening patrols. Other plans include sending field intelligence officers to the street. Overall crime is up 30% last month compared to April of last year. Mayor Adams also says they will crack down on fare cheaters in the subways. Nearly two dozen senators today implored President Joe Biden to swiftly advance a trade probe that they said was already causing massive disruption in the U.S. solar industry. The senators said the investigation involves whether Chinese companies are circumventing decades-old tariffs by assembling solar cells and modules in Southeast Asia. A hearing is set for today to determine if the remaining three survivors of the Tulsa race massacre will be able to take their case to trial. All three remaining survivors are over 100 years old, and their lawyers will argue that the city should be held accountable for the public nuisance created by the 1921 massacre. However, City Council member Vanessa Hall Harper says the city of Tulsa's lawyers are using the courts to get around a community-led plan to compensate them.
To use Beyond Apology to discredit this case is nothing but one of the tricks played by white supremacy, and I'm not falling for it.
The so-called Beyond Apology Project was passed to examine how to repair damage caused by the massacre. The Judds were inducted in the Country Music Hall of Fame last night, just a day after singer Naomi Judd died. Her daughter, Winona, who was the other half of the singing duo, spoke in accepting the award alongside her sister, Ashley.
I'm going to make this fast because my heart's broken. And I feel so blessed, and it's a very strange dynamic to be this broken and this blessed.
Winona and the family said Naomi Judd died at the age of 76 due to the disease of mental illness. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. Yankees and Mets, two best records in baseball. Mets and Phillies last night at Citi Field. Max Scherzer did not have his best stuff. Gave up three home runs, one to his former teammate, Bryce Harper. Two more to the Met killer from last year, Kyle Schwarber. The Phillies hit four home runs in all. The Mets did not hit any, and yet the Mets won 10-6 with a 15-hit attack. And Scherzer able to improve to 4-0 before the Mets won another series. Their seventh in a row. The Yankees won another game. Their ninth in a row. Finished the sweep in Kansas City 6-4. Aaron Judge a long home run in the first inning, but the Royals had a 4-1 lead, and the Yanks came back. Judge hit another homer in the ninth. He's hit seven homers in his last eight games. Yanks play tonight in Toronto. Top two teams in the AL East. The Yankee manager, Aaron Boone.
Obviously, they're a really good team. Off to a good start as well. A team I'm sure we're going to have to battle with all year if we want to get to where we want to go. So looking forward to going up there and playing against one of the game's best.
The Yanks start the series game and a half ahead of the Blue Jays. Mets tonight play the Atlanta Braves at Citi Field. NBA playoffs start of round two. Two wins by the road teams. Milwaukee in Boston, 101-89. Giannis Antetokounmpo, a triple-double. Golden State, a 117-116 win in Memphis. The other two series start tonight. Also, start of the Stanley Cup playoffs with four games. The Rangers and Pittsburgh Penguins begin their series tomorrow at the Garden. Rangers top scorer Artemi Panarin injured at the end of the regular season, but he has been cleared to play the series opener. Golf in Mexico, win for John Rahm, his first since last year's U.S. Open. John Stashelli, Bloomberg Sports, Nathan.
Thanks, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Qantas Airways has revived a plan to start direct flights connecting Australia's east coast with New York and London, as it finally has ordered Airbus jets for the ultra-long services. The airline says it'll buy 12 A350-1000s. They can fly nonstop from Australia to any city in the world. Union workers at two Pratt & Whitney jet engine plants in Connecticut approved a new labor pact for an important Raytheon unit. The three-year agreement ensures continued production at facilities manufacturing and supporting jet engines powering Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and Airbus aircraft. Jersey City has been named one of America's next great food cities by Food & Wine magazine. The city's Indian and Asian eateries are highlighted by the publication. You're up to date on business from the Beltway to Baltimore. I'm Ed Corey, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM, HD2.
Okay, Ed, thank you. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio's on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that a proposed class action against Google says the Fitbit maker did not go far enough in recalling a single model of the device over burn risk.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. A fertilizer crunch is wrecking crops all around the globe.
I'm Caroline Hepke. We get a rate decision from the RBA. We look at the EU's discussions on further Russia sanctions and energy restrictions. plus BP and BNP Paribas earnings. My guests include Skylar Montgomery Koning of TS Lombard.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting the United States needs to grow a domestic battery business to meet the demands of electric vehicles.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has long been known as the world's top public health agency. But throughout the pandemic, the CDC has stumbled repeatedly. To be sure, some of the agency's troubles have stemmed from political interference, as well as the inherent challenges of dealing with a new virus. But the CDC also made needless errors, such as distributing faulty COVID tests in the early days of the outbreak. To prevent such mistakes in the future, a thorough review of laboratory operations and improvements to data collection and reporting are needed. Although the CDC lacks the regulatory powers that its counterparts in other countries have, it can still provide crucial data, expertise, and advice to health officials and the public alike. First, though, it needs to rebuild the trust that it had long taken for granted. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OP on Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
Listen for Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. S&P futures up 21 points. Dow futures up 181. NASDAQ futures up 74 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 1/32. The yield 2.93%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, cloudy with a high in the upper 50s today, mid-60s tomorrow under clouds, showers and a high near 60 on Wednesday. Right now, cloudy and 53 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures rebounding from Friday's bruising sell-off, which was Wall Street's worst day in almost 2 years. Outside of the U.S., stocks are declining as disappointing economic data from China and the prospect of sanctions on Russian oil weighs heavily on risk appetite. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 17 points, Dow futures up 153, NASDAQ futures up 62, the DAX in Germany's down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32. Yield 2.93%. They yield on the 2-year 2.72%. NYMEX crude oil is down 3.1% on $3.26 at $101.43 a barrel. COMEX gold down 1.7% or $32 at $18.79.80 an ounce. The euro 1.0522 against the dollar. British pound 1.2566. The yen is at 129.91. And Bitcoin this morning is at $38,840. That's up 1.33%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. In Ukraine, the United Nations and Red Cross were able to successfully evacuate about 100 civilians from a besieged steel plant in Mariupol. However, many more remain there alongside Ukrainian fighters. Meanwhile, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and other lawmakers are continuing their overseas trip. After meeting with Ukrainian President Zelensky in Kyiv yesterday, Pelosi and other U.S. lawmakers met with Polish President Duda, among other Polish officials, in Warsaw today. In the NBA playoffs, the Celtics lost to the Bucks 101-89 in the opening game of their series. The Warriors beat the Grizzlies 117-116 in their game one. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets won. The Orioles beat the Red Sox 9-5. The Nationals beat the Giants 11-5. The A's lost. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Michael. Michael, thank you. It is 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and this is the week when the Fed is expected to kick off an aggressive hiking cycle to get a handle on 40-year inflation. For more, we're joined by Matthew Luzzetti, chief U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank Securities. Matt, it's good to speak with you this morning. Does the Fed deliver what the market is expecting and front-load multiple 50 basis point moves?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. I think no doubt the Fed has been sending pretty strong signals this week that they will kick off with a 50 basis point rate hike move. In addition to that they will announce QT, the drawdown of their balance sheet. We think most likely that that begins in June. But I think the more uncertainty is around what signals do we get from Chair Powell about the path from here. I think that they won't tell you about any specific sequence, but that he will affirm further 50 basis point moves, at least one, and that he will continue to talk about expeditiously, quote unquote, getting back to a neutral policy setting by the end of this year. Ultimately, we think that they'll hike rates again by 50 basis points in June and July, and that the Fed funds rate will peak eventually around 3.5% next year.
Do the signs of contraction that we got last week, the 1.4% negative move in GDP, have any impact on the Fed's path going forward?
Not yet. The composition of that was one that the underlying economy still has pretty good momentum. We had strong consumer spending growth, strong CapEx growth, residential investment actually added. And what was actually a driver of the downturn was some quirks in the trade data, inventories, and government spending. So I think the Fed is looking at an economy that still has very meaningful momentum in the labor market. I think we'll see that this week, probably with the job openings data and jolts tomorrow, and then this Friday with the labor report, and that labor market momentum is feeding an inflationary economy, both from price inflation and wage inflation, certainly as we saw with the ECI data on Friday, one that is, you know, Chair Powell called it tight to an unhealthy level, and one that requires the Fed to hike aggressively in the near term and likely to get to a restrictive stance next year.
What would it take, Matt, for the Fed to consider a 75 basis point move? We've got 50-50 odds in the market that that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, we saw Jim Bullard, the St. Louis Fed president, a few weeks ago begin to at least float the notion of considering it, although some of his colleagues then, you know, rather quickly suggested that it wasn't a desirable outcome. I think the way that we're seeing the Fed's response now is upfront a sequence of 50 basis point moves. And as long as inflation begins to show or continues to show some evidence of dissipation, as long as you see the labor market begin to cool in some ways with labor demand come down, that will be the sequence that they take and then can ease into a 25 basis point rate hike cycle from there. I think the risk scenario is one in which inflation reaccelerates and perhaps inflation expectations begin to show some updrift and moving higher. That would be one that the Fed becomes very worried about. The inflation expectations have been the one remaining element of the inflation picture that has looked positive. So if those were to turn, they'd be more worried. And that's where I think the 75 basis point moves could come into the picture.
Are you expecting that we're going to see any signs of cooling to labor market demand when we get the jobs report on Friday?
So I think you could see some evidence tomorrow in the jolts. And I think the jolt is just taking on a lot more importance these days because Chair Powell has talked about the fact that labor demand has to come down. We've seen evidence from the NFIB, the Small Business Survey, of job openings coming off. Also, the Indeed private market data has rolled over a little bit. So we could see some evidence there. On Friday, though, we continue to expect to see a strong labor market. We're expecting 465,000 jobs to be added, the unemployment rate to tick down further to 3.5%. We'll have to see what happens with wage growth. We're expecting some moderation in the year-over-year terms. That'll be an important data point to watch. But for the time being, all the data we see, jobless claims remaining near decade-low levels, what we're seeing in the labor market, all suggest at least in the near term, the labor market has a lot of momentum.
Thanks for this, Matt. Great having you on with us. Matthew Luzzetti, Chief U.S. Economist at Deutsche Bank Securities. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
People who qualify for both Medicare and Medicaid can expect more transparency and lower out-of-pocket costs for medications under a final rule by the Biden administration. A lawsuit against Walmart was filed in a Michigan federal court. The giant retailer is accused of improperly firing more than 100 employees who were out on medical leave. Google signed a $7 million settlement with advertisers in a California federal court. The plaintiffs had claimed they did not get full refunds for invalid ad traffic.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Now another legal story we're watching. What will happen when free speech absolutist Elon Musk takes control of Twitter, one of the most influential social media platforms? Musk's idealized view of Twitter as a haven for unfettered speech will face trade-offs that inevitably have to be made. For more, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to First Amendment law expert Eugene Volokh, a professor at UCLA Law School.
In trying to explain his position on freedom of speech, he tweeted, quote, "I simply mean that which matches the law." Is he showing naivete in thinking that it's a simple concept like that?
Well, I think you said he tweeted that. Well, you can't capture even First Amendment rules in 280 characters or less, and you certainly can't capture the possible differences between free speech and First Amendment rules in 280 characters or less. You know, if you want to kind of take a first cut, admittedly oversimplified view, you might say, yes, our view should be that Twitter should, generally speaking, protect free speech, at least so long as it's not illegal speech. So no, we won't host child pornography. No, we won't host things that are clearly conspiracy to commit crimes or kind of accounts that are being used for criminal conspiracy, let's say. We won't host copyright infringement because that's illegal. But pretty much all other things, generally speaking, we're going to host. Maybe there'll be a few exceptions, but they really should be very narrow exceptions. It's a plausible way of thinking about these.
Some civil rights advocates have said that minimizing content moderation would disproportionately harm women and minorities. Does a kind of minimally moderated Twitter pose dangers?
Well, of course free speech poses dangers. Free speech has always posed dangers. That's one reason why governments do indeed try to restrict. And there's nothing special about those dangers for us to women or as to minorities or as to others. Just to give an example, there have been a lot of attacks on police officers recently, and some of them seem to be prompted by kind of very harsh criticism and kind of dehumanizing criticisms of police officers. And that's something that is a downside of speech. Of course, speech is potentially harmful. But generally speaking, when it comes to the First Amendment, we take the view that on balance, it's better for everyone. And historically, this has been especially important for various out-of-favor minority groups, that speech be protected. Because when speech is restricted, that keeps people from being able to argue about what they think are genuine wrongs and to advocate for change.
And that's Eugene Volokh, a professor at UCLA Law School, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at VLawGo. S&P futures up about 18 points this morning. Dow futures up 153. NASDAQ futures up 61. The 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 2.93%, and the yield on the 2-year at 2.72%. And our top story is straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.